There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. It is here. I have blabbed about it for 8 days. Team Nerdist Bulls, Team Breaking Bad. Today on the Nerdist channel, youtube.com/Nerdist. Click the subscribe button because that is our lifeblood and we appreciate it. It was an amazing episode. We went to Albuquerque, New Mexico and bowled against the cast of Breaking Bad. And the results may shock you. I don't know if they will. I don't know. I don't know what you're shocked by. I have to be honest. I was just trying to be sensationalist because that's how media works. And I don't always support that part of it. So it's a fun episode. Just go see it. How about that? Then you decide. Don't let me tell you what to think. But I think you're probably going to like it a lot. I'm choking. I'm choking on my own sensationalism. No, don't cut that out, Katie. Leave it in. I can choke on a podcast. People choke in life. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. You know, there are a few things that are a bigger waste of your time than going to the post office, like stabbing yourself in the face with a pair of scissors you find in a library. That is a tremendous waste of time. That is the only thing that is a bigger waste of time than going to the post office. With Stamps.com, you never need to do that again. You can buy and print official U.S. postage using your own computer and printer. You can print out the exact postage you need for any letter or package right from your desk using the free digital scale. You don't have to put a bunch of stamps on there and give a bunch of cents to the government that you're not going to use. Oh, I wasted like 22 cents. I didn't need to, is what something you might say in your life. But you don't have to do that anymore with Stamps.com. Saves you money. You get discounts you can't even find at the post office. It's a fraction of the cost of a postage meter. Stamps.com. So right now, you can go to Stamps.com, use the promo code Nerdist for a very special offer. No risk trial. $110 bonus includes a digital scale and up to $55 of free postage. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com, click the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and then type in Nerdist. Stamps.com, promo code Nerdist. Now this episode, remember how earlier in the intro, which is what we call this part of the podcast, just a little technical terminology for you guys out there who are thinking about starting your own PCasts. I just made up PCast. Should I call them PCasts? Great, Katie?
Yeah.
Or is that for Seth? That's more for Sandra's podcast. PCasts. Let's have some PCasts. I'm going to get a cast of my pee. Is that weird? Just midstream. I'm just going to cast it. I think that would be an amazing thing to do. I think maybe I am on meth right now in celebration for the Team Breaking Bad episode, which, again, so much fun. We talked to Aaron Paul, who's the guest today. We got him right before we bowled the match. We went to the back to the pro shop, which, by the way, had a lot of really cool bowling balls in the back. There was an Avengers bowling ball and there was a Marvel bowling ball, like a separate Marvel bowling ball and a Star Wars bowling bag. So they know how to bowl out there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So we were in the back of the pro shop right next to where they drill bowling balls. So hopefully, you know, if you hear some bowling in the background or you hear some like dance music, I think the kids call it, that it's because we were in the pro shop with Aaron Paul. But terrific, terrific guy. And I mean, obviously an incredible actor and really, really fun to talk to. Matt, Jonah, and I just sitting all squunched up next to a bowling ball drill press. Here we go, the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 214 with Aaron Paul, the guy that people say I should play his brother in something. Aaron may not say that because I don't know if he wants me to play his brother on anything, but other people have suggested that. And quite frankly, their word is law. Strangers that I don't know on Twitter, I always listen to what they say. So I will. Here is my brother, the successful brother, Aaron Paul Hardwick. I'm Chris Paul.
Now entering
Nerdist.com.
Aaron Paul, we're in the back of a pro shop at
yes,
a bowling center, which is very... This pro shop, by the way, I saw a Captain America ball, I saw an Optimus Prime ball,
a Star Wars
bowling bag. You said you also have the skull ball that's
over
there?
Yeah, we both have the skull ball. It's from, what, Mystery Men?
It's from Mystery Men, yeah.
I had to get one once I saw that.
And I saw, since we're about to bowl... You actually staked out.
I did. It's just, you know, it fits the fingers so perfectly. I had to grab it when I could.
Did you have to get territorial in a bowling center? Because if you don't get your ball, then it totally affects your game.
It does.
Do you guys do this bowling thing a lot?
Every year. Yeah, Brian and I, we always want to, you know, do something to kind of give back to the cast and crew. So,
yeah,
we started doing this a couple years ago.
Nice.
And so, yeah.
Is it just a fun night, or is there any competition element?
You know what? Last year I didn't even bowl. I just kind of like ran around, handed out prizes. There's lots of prizes out there. A lot of BB like swag. But
is that the year that you guys dressed up like each other's characters?
We always dress up as each other's characters.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't dress up at the bowling night, but that is a really good idea.
I think so.
Yeah, that is a really good idea.
I'm gonna turn off this air conditioning unit.
It's probably gonna be it. Yeah.
There we go.
Sure. So Aaron Paul, it's thrilling to have you on the podcast.
Thank
because
you so much.
People have been requesting you on the podcast for a long time. There is a sect of Twitter that is convinced that you and I are cousins.
I know.
Or
I get that all the time. I get that all the time, yeah. You're a good-looking man.
No, see, you're a very attractive
you
man.
You are a beautiful man.
Know each other,
no,
guys.
I want you guys...
You are a beautiful man.
Even though you guys are complimenting each other, it's still a very vain conversation. You're an attractive man. We do look alike.
Right. We are, yes.
You guys leave, but the sound guy, you should stay.
You can stay. You should definitely stay.
Have fun with your jawlines, assholes.
I will have fun with it.
Yes.
But also, excellent work in the Weird Al.
We co-starred. I played the bass player in the band.
Oh my God, that's right.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah,
that
was
fun.
Me and Aaron on set had a blast. I tell people all the time. Close personal friend Aaron Paul and I on the set with Matt Jones.
I don't recall you guys interacting that much on the...
I say something to him,
and then he
responds. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Behind the scenes, we really just we hit it off.
Yeah.
It was good. It was so much fun, though.
I skipped work to go do it.
Yeah.
It was. It still holds up, too. I just watched it recently.
Yeah.
Like in Mary Steenburgen. And the guy who made that, the guy who wrote and directed that, just had a baby girl.
He did.
Yes, just the other day.
Erica Powell.
On 420. Yeah. He's going to name her Weed Hitler Columbine.
I really hope that's not the name that she's going to get.
Too late. He said it as a joke right away. They put it in the books. It's all done.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's done. It's done.
Wait, I didn't mean it. It was already.
Oh, well, now turn it back.
Yeah, so now it's Hitler Columbine 420. I didn't mean.
Please. Fuck it.
By the time she's old enough for anyone to really use that name, enough time will have passed.
Yeah. So much time.
No, who's still going to be upset about those horrible things?
The Jews in Colorado.
I mean, come on. I've seen your work for quite a while now, and for a long time. If you look at your IMDb page, which I did, there's like 50 or 60 credits, and there's just a bunch of years where it's just guest star, pretty much on everything.
Yeah.
So what were you during those times? Was it kind of like, all right, the next thing's got to be the thing? Or were you just happy in the moment to be working?
You know, to be honest, I was just happy to be working. There were so many times where I wasn't working. So anytime I would get, you know, five lines on something, I'd be like, yes, I got to pretend to be someone else. You know, I don't know. It's good. But I was also doing commercials on the side. Yeah. So I was never really struggling financially. But commercials, I mean, for me, that's not really what I wanted to do. And I still have a lot of friends that... just live off of
it's
commercials.
It's a miserable experience, the auditioning process.
Oh, the audition. I mean, it's just such a catacall, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's such a shit show. You never know. I mean, it's just a look thing.
Yeah.
You know?
When you walk in and they go, just act surprised. You go, huh? And they go, thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, the worst, one of the worst commercial castings was for Tic Tac. Do you remember the Tic Tac commercial where you're acting like you're balancing a bunch of Tic Tacs on your tongue? Have you seen those? And they're like, oh, could you just act like you're really balancing a high row of Tic Tacs? And they're like, stick your tongue out really far. Like, really move around. I'm like, wow, this is not what I wanted.
You had one where they're like, just you're really into this ice cream cone and you're really just licking it. I was like, so just like, and they're like, just do it for a while. And then it was just, and then the whole realization of like, I'm in a room with a guy and a camera going, like fucking faking it. And so, yeah, that was the last one I ever went on.
Are you sure this is what the Ben and Jerry's people want? Mm-hmm.
Ben and Jerry's?
What?
Yeah.
Leave the basement? Is that allowed?
You mean my friends Ben and Jerry. Yeah, that's what they jerk off to.
So just keep sucking the fake cone.
Yeah.
I had to give up commercial auditions years ago because it crushed. It really hurts your soul.
It eats away at your soul.
It really does because you feel...
Yeah, I can't even watch them anymore. I just fast forward right back.
Yeah, I was so traumatized. Yeah. But I just, you know, you go to those giant casting studios and every corner, it's almost like a Noah's Ark where it's like, okay, all the 4-year-olds over there, all the African American males over there,
a bizarre world that, you know, we live in.
But some guys, if you can crack that code.
Oh yeah. There is like some sort of strange method. I mean, you know, like when you start booking commercials, you'll get back to back to back, and then it'll just be a dry spell for a while, and then, you know, I don't know. It's just a strange world.
What's another, like a guy that played Badger on Breaking Bad? Like he's on commercials all the time,
all over the place.
Yeah, but then he'll be just absent for a while, and then you'll see, like, you'll either hear him or see him on like 3 more commercials.
Yeah,
I don't think I ever booked any. I think. When I was really young, I think I booked like a Slice commercial.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I'm in the green now.
Yeah, you're making it happen.
A couple $1,000 over the course of a year, you know. Like,
my first job ever was a Kellogg's Corn Pops commercial.
Sure.
And I got to do that classic line, got to have my pops. But I haven't eaten
Corn
Pops.
Did you sell it a little better than that? Because
yeah, I did. You gotta admit.
The classic line we all know and love, made popular by me.
Did people know you? They're like, would you be in the store? And they're like, hey, it's the gotta have my pops guy.
Oh my god, yeah. I'm so glad that those days are over. Because
it was just go, bitch.
Bitch. Now they're like, dude, say bitch. Please call me a bitch. Call my wife a bitch.
I'm gonna call her. Just tell her it's you.
No, please. I'm not a puppet. Please, I'm not your puppet.
I am not your puppet. Please.
Don't make me say bitch.
But now, I mean, I still get, wait, we went to school together, right?
Yes.
But before, all the time, oh, hey. Good to see you. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. We don't know each other.
And then, so finally, was Breaking Bad, was this really the show that kind of like, that kind of broke everything for you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Big Love kind of opened up.
Oh, yeah, you were great on that.
And so many people just thought I was creepy. I think it was the hair, maybe. They parted down the center. I don't know.
Or the dating the teenage girl.
Right. Or that. But
No.
I don't think it was that. So I think maybe it was the hair. But yeah, I mean, this definitely is above and beyond anything that I've ever done. So proud to be a part of this show because I'm such a huge fan of the show.
Well, it really is an amazing feat in this business to get a job, have it be successful, and then be able to be really proud of what you do. It's such a rare trifecta gift that so few people get in this business.
Yeah, it's so rare. So, I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do after this. I mean, I constantly joke around with my fiance. She runs a nonprofit, so I'm like, maybe I can just, you know, kind of hang out with you and just do that and just retire the whole acting thing.
Ah, you're one of those. You could go into movies.
Yeah, we'll see, man. You never know. I'm trying.
It's going to be good. You could do the... You could go into movies. You could like knock Jeremy Renner off the.
oh man!
Take those. You could be Hawkeye. Oh, you could be Hawkeye. You could be a fucking Hawkeye.
Why aren't I Hawkeye? I mean, let's discuss.
You know what we should do? We should just for YouTube. We should take the Avengers and just cut you into all the scenes and be like, see,
I can do this.
Just like Wilson did with Fillion on the Green Lantern.
We'll make it look like look really shitty. Like he made it on his own. Like, listen, this is why I should be Hawkeye. If they do another Avengers. just really bad compositing.
We're like that thing that Jim Carrey did for Man on the Moon, but instead of for just the casting people, just for the world.
Yes, yeah, exactly. The world. That's how T.J. Miller got in the Yogi Bear movie. So, there are success stories.
Yeah, our friend T.J. Miller auditioned for the Yogi Bear movie, and he dressed as the Ranger.
With a live bear.
Yeah. And made a video of himself as the Ranger with a live bear.
Really? And sent it in?
Just sent it in as a joke.
And he got it.
And then
that is amazing.
Yeah, he has this whole story where he tells about, like, it's like he did it as a joke, and then, like, they're like, hey, we actually want to see you for this. He's all, wouldn't that be funny if, like, I went in for the actual audition because of this dumb video I made? Then he went in, and they're like, we want to see you again. He's all, wouldn't that be funny if I actually got the part because of this dumb video I made? And then he got the part.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. That's amazing.
So audition with bears, I guess, is the takeaway.
All right.
Do you have time? Do you even have time to audition for film right now, or is Breaking Bad the most of your year?
Yeah, I mean, Breaking Bad is usually, it's a little different this year because we're only doing 8, but usually it's about 6 months out of the year. So during shooting, I'm not really auditioning. I mean, I may read some scripts here or there, but I'm basically out in New Mexico for 6 months out of the year.
How do you, at the end of a day, are you super emotionally sensitive in the sense that do you at the end of your day when you're shooting the kind of stuff you're shooting, are you able to scrub it off, or does it just stick with you the rest of the night?
You know, I think I used to just take myself way too seriously, and so I tried to stay in the character almost the entirety of shooting a season, which is just not healthy. You know, I'm like, you know, I somewhat method, but maybe I shouldn't be that method. But now, I mean, Brian's definitely taught me you have to leave it on set, because if you don't, you're just going to drive yourself crazy. Because I mean, all these characters, but Jesse in particular, he's just such an emotional wreck at times, and he's just constantly getting his ass kicked or constantly just trying to keep his head above water. You know, so it's just a constant struggle.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty cool that, for all intents and purposes, I think, you know, the initial sort of concept of the show was going to be, it's all about Walter, and then it really is kind of about you guys. Like, it's like, you really managed, when people talk about the show, they don't just say, oh, yeah, Walter, you know, they say, well, they talk about Jesse Pinkman, too.
Yeah. I mean, Jesse was supposed to, you know, I'm sure you know, Jesse was supposed to die in the first season. Yep. And I didn't know this when we started shooting. They told me when we were almost done, I hadn't read the final script yet, but Vince brought me over and he said, hey, listen, I just want to let you know Jesse is going to die at the end of this season. And my heart just dropped, you know, because I was like, wait, is that still happening? You know, they're like, no, we want to keep you around. We just love the kind of tug of war element that Walt and Jesse have, and so we're just going to, you know, roll with it. But every year they constantly tease me, you know, oh, have you read the next episode yet? Like Brian in the middle of the third season, he came up to me out of nowhere, and he had this like, kind of like sad, just like serious face, and he comes up, grabs my hand, and then pulls me close for like a big passionate hug. I'm like, hey, man. And he just like really held it. And I go, is everything okay? He's like, man, it has been such a pleasure working with you. And I go, yeah, man, it's been so much fun, right? What a crazy ride. I mean, we're so lucky. And he goes, yeah, man, but you know what? Things are going to be, like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes,
I saw the corn pops.
He goes, you read it, right? You read that it was just sent out. And I go, no, I haven't read anything. He's like, oh, well, just... I'm sorry.
And then he just
walks off. He doesn't even tell me. And I'm like, whoa, that was really serious. Was he joking? And then of course I had to run and get my script and flip through it, and I was fine. But.
Oh man,
did he ever say anything afterwards?
Oh, like, I mean, I went up to him. I'm like, you bastard! I read, and he just started laughing and ran off. You know, exactly. He does. You know, he's Cranston. He does those sort of things.
I mean, it's hard enough because you never have any. You know, it's so hard to feel any security in this business whatsoever. And I don't know how actors who are already, you know, there's a lot of insecurity and a lot of sensitivity and, you know, so to put these kinds of people into this structure of a business, it's just such a toxic mix.
It is such a toxic mix, and actors, they're already all so fucking nuts, you know, and insecure and just out of their minds, and, you know, they just want to pretend like they're someone else, you know, and it's just a mess.
Have you found, has this show kind of helped cure any of that at all? I mean, do you feel more comfortable now coming out?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, I gotta admit, I mean, coming onto the show, I didn't think I was a horrible actor. I mean, I thought it was okay, but I've learned so much from this show, and I've learned so much from Brian just working. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, I'm stroking him right now, but it's true. He's amazing to watch, and I definitely take away something new every episode from him, truly. And, yeah, and I think when I leave the show, I look back and I'm very proud of the work that everyone has done. I mean, I think everyone on the show is at the top of their game. So.
Yeah, it's a perfect show. It's just such a perfect show. There's nothing wrong with it. I love the show so much.
Do you know anything on what's happening this season?
No, I was actually kind of worried when Chris said we were coming out to do this. Yeah. I was like, I don't want to see that, like, you know, maybe one of them has, like, a crease on his head from an eye patch they're wearing that's going to give something away. Yeah. Like, I didn't, like, I was so, when you guys showed, I was like, all right, yeah. Nothing's wrong with Jesse, nothing's wrong with Walter.
We don't know anything, and it's hard to, I mean, you guys do, I think you do a pretty good job of keeping a lid on stuff.
Yeah, they're very, very serious this year, like, with not allowing, you know, strangers to come to set. They used to, you know, give out set visits for charity, and so they're like, no, we can't. Like, we gotta really keep it on the down low. But I gotta tell you, each season, you know, as you guys know, each season does, like, raise the stakes, and each season does get darker. And this season is so unbelievably dark. I mean, you just see it. I mean, it's not like, I don't want to say anything, but it just gets so intense.
What's great about that, though, is the darker and more serious, and the when all the stakes are just insanely raised. It's just the laugh. The laughs and the jokes in the show just seem to be even better,
right?
Because, like, just the
release.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just the show is just, like, got, like, so good at both, you know.
Yeah.
Like, giving you, like, the quality laughs.
Yeah.
In an episode, but just still that, like, episode when you're done, you're just like, oh fuck. But I was catching up, like, first two seasons. I was just watching them all in a row, like, but I was supposed to watch it with my girlfriend. And so, but I was keeping it a secret from her. So at the same time, I was kind of living the life of Walter White.
Yeah.
Just like, what'd you do today? I just worked on a bunch of stuff.
I mean, I don't know if watching a series ahead of your girlfriend is quite the life of Walter White.
I know. But isn't it funny comparison? As if it was a joke I said.
Murder and meth and cancer are the same as...
It's not real, Chris. It's a
Netflix.
Television show.
No, it's not.
But yeah, it's weird. It's kind of like if you ever play like Grand Theft Auto for like a long period of time, and then you get into your car and start driving around, you're like, I'm gonna fucking kill somebody. Because it doesn't seem to fucking, that's what I felt like when watching all that show. I was like, I just want to fucking do some more cocaine or something, like, you know, I just wanted to
run over a hooker or something.
I just wanted to do something bad.
Yeah,
it's a good show.
Oh, they're jamming out there in the bowling center.
Oh, no, it's going to get pretty intense.
It is going to.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Do you guys have the whole bowling center?
Yeah.
This time? Oh, sweet.
Yeah, we every year we rent out the entire thing, and it's an open bar. So, you know, I realized that already. Yeah, oh,
that's
good, good.
You don't work for Breaking Bad, so please don't.
I did. I tried to pay. The guy's like, it's all on Brian.
All right.
Are they saying it's all on Brian?
That's what the guy
said. All on Brian and Aaron, by the way. When I was trying to get in, I walked in, they're like, your name, please. I'm like, Aaron Paul. Like, you're not on the. I'm like, I work on the show. They're like, well, you're not on the. And actually, someone that works with you guys. Like, oh no, he's fine. I'm like, Brian. And they're like, oh, you're with Brian. I'm like, well, Brian and I. He's getting.
Yeah, Brian.
Oh, you're done.
Yeah,
Nerdist
he gets
thing?
All the
yeah,
credit.
Come on in.
Yeah.
I know. I had the same thing. I kind of had to be like, no, I'm supposed to be here. And I don't even work on Breaking Bad, and I'm still like, no, I'm positive I'm supposed to be here. And the guy's like, I don't. I kind of think, I felt like he just had a list of made-up names, and no one was on it. And everyone had to go through that when they came in.
We just walked in.
Well, the guy asked if we were here for the party, and you're like, no. We didn't know there was
really?
A party, yeah.
Oh, so that was
walking.
That
just
was the thing.
You just think
just
you
get, yeah, just, if
just
you, keep you know,
you just
yeah,
walk
just
in like you own the place.
Yeah, exactly.
Albuquerque is a really interesting town. I spent the whole day walking around. It's nice, and it really, I mean, it's it's odd. It's like a time capsule from the 60s mm-hmm. when you can tell that, you know, this area sprung up and everyone was crazy about Route 66. All those motels. When they didn't have technology, we got excited about roads.
Yeah, exactly.
The dream will never die in Albuquerque.
No. Yeah, it is an interesting town.
What do you do to, like, how much time do you spend here?
About 6 months out of the year, you know.
Ballooning, what do you do?
The first year I experienced all of Albuquerque and Santa Fe, like the surrounding towns.
But what about the second week?
Second week, just, you know, redid all the same stuff. I did the first week. No, and then I explored the state. Is a beautiful state. Yeah. Really, it's kind of like just this magical, spiritual place. The skies are endless. It's beautiful. I went to the zoo the other day.
How was it?
It was amazing. I got to play with a baby elephant.
What?
Yeah. Really? Go to the zoo. Play with the elephant.
All right, mom.
Yeah.
Go to the zoo.
Go to the zoo. Play with the elephant. Hang out with the monkey.
They won't stop you. Walk in just like you did the bowling center.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm not here for the party, but I have an elephant to meet.
Yeah, it's nice to come to a place where there's not a lot to obstruct your view and the air is clean.
Yeah.
It is oppressively hot. I already got a nosebleed this morning. I haven't had a nosebleed.
Really? Oh, yeah. When I was shooting the pilot, everyone was getting nosebleeds during the pilot. I got three. I haven't had a nosebleed since I was like 11.
And it's funny, you have when you're 11, you're like, yeah, whatever, I'm going to go out and play. But now you're like, this is a stroke. This is not.
You're not supposed to bleed from your face for no reason.
Yeah,
this is not good. And when you get a nosebleed, I mean, it just keeps coming. It's just, you feel it pouring out of your brain.
Yeah, it feels weird. You're like, that blood's too close to my brain. Yeah, I think I'm going to need it.
My eyes are right
just
there.
Just feel the level in your brain. My brain's dry. Is my brain dry?
Was your fiance able to come out and stay with you for a while?
Yeah, she came out.
She works for a nonprofit. Of course she was, Chris.
Yeah, they're very. What are you talking about? They get busy.
Yeah, I know, but you can do it from anywhere.
I mean, she travels the country about 9 months out of the year. So she's pretty. She's on the road all the time. But yeah, she's able to come out every now and then. And so she came out yesterday. She flew out yesterday morning, and she has to leave tomorrow because she's going to the East Coast.
How much longer are you guys shooting?
We're here until the end of June.
Oh, you got a while.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought this was like a wrap. This is just like a mid.
Yeah, we always do something in the mid, and then we do like a big wrap party.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Putt for the wrap party.
Golf and stuff.
Yeah.
Before the big karate tournament.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do.
The regional karate tournament.
The regional karate tournament. You're supposed to do the big putt match. I was driving. I mean, we walked up and down old downtown.
Yeah, old town.
Old town.
Yeah.
It was really nice. They really kind of revitalized, and you know, it was a hipstery, but it was okay.
Yeah.
There's
a great go-kart track right down the road.
What?
It's actually an indoor karting track that we were introduced to it 1 year because Brian rented it out for everybody.
Oh, he's so nice. Like what he did tonight, right?
Yeah, exactly. What he did tonight.
To rent out this whole facility. Are you sure you should even be here? Because your name was not on the list.
My name was on the list. Was I invited? I don't know.
I just heard about ice go-kart driving. Some guy was talking to this guy in England. And he says there's a track where they just ice it out and then you just Tokyo drift all over the place.
Wow. Yeah, they don't have that here.
It's not just Tokyo drifting. You can just drift a car.
No, it's Tokyo.
It doesn't have to be
Tokyo drifting.
It's Tokyo drift.
Yeah.
They made a movie about it.
I don't think they did. Torque?
Torque.
Was it Torque?
Torque? Maybe not. Torque-io
drift.
I don't know.
I love the idea.
Oh, Drive Angry 3D.
I love the idea of living in Los Angeles and constantly being told you can't come in places, and then coming to New Mexico to a bowling alley in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, like, yeah. I'm sorry, you can't.
You can't come in here.
Last night I was trying to get my friend to go to a bar, and he's all, "Well, my friend's wearing shorts. Is that cool?" I was like, "What kind of bar do you think I'm taking you to? Shorts are going to be a problem. You think I'm some kind of fucking asshole?"
Sorry, man.
No hats, no t-shirts, no shorts.
There's places in LA like that where they...
Yeah, but I don't want to fucking go there.
I know.
Fuck that. That's on the other side of La Brea.
Yeah, but this place doesn't even... But in Albuquerque, we went to this place called Sadie's last night. Have you been to Sadie's?
No.
It's this mega restaurant, and the food was... It's one of the best burritos I've ever had in my life. Yeah. It was one of those where you see, like, total burnouts, and then another table will be... It was like there was prom, so it was a bunch of prom kids.
Yeah, there's so many prom kids all over the place last night.
Like, just literally running through the streets.
Yeah, and I ask, I go, "Hey, are you guys going to prom?" And they look at me, they're like, No. Like, what? Well, you guys
Saturday finest, sir.
You guys
back
looking
off.
Nice. Okay.
We only dress like shit during the day, sir. At night, we put on the Ritz. We're putting on the Ritz. What else is there to do here? What else is there to do?
Well, I mentioned go-karting.
You can go-kart, you can play with Baby Elephant. That's pretty much it.
You can play with Baby Elephant, go-karting. I mean...
Make a TV show. You can do that.
Yeah. You know, we don't really have much time off, so I just fly. If I have a Friday off, I fly back to LA.
Oh yeah, of
course. Is it 6 day weeks or is it a?
No, it's Monday through Friday.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah, so if I get off in time, like to make a flight on Friday, I'll just go. But yeah, I don't know. We've been here for a long time, so
you'll miss it.
I will. I mean, I have brought, both Brian and I bought a place out here second season, so.
I heard you paid for yours.
Huh?
I heard you paid for yours.
Yeah, I paid for mine. Isotopes game is so fun. It's the AAA league baseball.
Yeah, I saw the sign for the Isotopes.
And it is actually, it's a blast. I mean, I haven't been to a AAA game in
Wasn't there
God,
a Simpsons
years.
Baseball team called the Isotopes?
Yeah. Wasn't there? There is.
Springfield Isotopes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's their team.
That is the Springfield team.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen is someday in like 20 years, you might just be driving through and they like, I think I got to stop here for a while. I just really, you'll be so connected to this part, to this part of the country. It's so different from what we're, people forget how much room there, I'm about to take a road trip.
Yeah.
And I think people forget how much room there is in the country because you feel so jammed into the coastal regions and you're like, there's a fucking lot of space.
There's a lot of space. And like, you'll see, you go outside, I mean, the skies are endless. It just goes on and on and on. And so, you know, the sun sets and, you know, it's the most beautiful thing that I've seen. I've never seen, you know, let's get romantic about it right now. Let's be honest.
Little fluffy clouds.
Yeah, yeah.
How long have you been in L.A.?
15 years. I moved out there when I was 17.
Oh, nice.
For a long time. I'm from Idaho.
Oh, Idaho's great.
Beautiful, yeah.
The driving across the panhandle, you know, I spent time in Driggs, Idaho, which is just over from Jackson Hole.
Yeah.
And then the panhandle of, you know, if you're going from like Washington, like all up there in the Pacific Northwest, you kind of cut down. It's gorgeous.
Boise.
That's where I'm from.
The original Albertsons.
Yes. The first Joe Albertsons. Yeah.
Yeah. I played a show there at, like JR's Barbecue, some of that. Is that a place in Boise?
I don't know.
It's like it's a bar that also, like, there's a guy out back with like the fucking smoke barrel barbecue set up.
Yeah. It's not like right in downtown, but it's kind of connected to the downtown. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was it was the kind of bar where there was a chain link fence around the stage because people did end up throwing bottles at us.
Wow.
I know, seems like a nice, friendly
place full of drunks.
Okay. how's a young boy, a 17-year-old boy from Idaho, make his way west to Los Angeles?
Oh, man.
I don't know what this accent was, by the way.
I like
that.
That's
not
it,
how you guys talk. I'm from Idaho.
I knew I wanted to move out to L.A., I think, ever since 8th grade was my first acting class, like, in school.
Yeah.
And so I came from nothing, you know, we didn't really have any money growing up. My family didn't. So I started saving up money from that point. And when I went into high school, I got very serious. I was such the theater geek. I had no life. I'd never had a girlfriend. it was just theater, you know, and I went to school an hour early so I could do an extra class so I can graduate early. So I graduated a year early.
Oh, shit.
Oh, wow.
And just packed up my car at 17, and I think I had, you know, just over $5,000 saved up, and that was, like, so much money.
That is a lot of money when you're 17.
Yeah, so much money. I worked such random... I mean, I was a Pizza Hut delivery boy. I was a mascot for two different radio stations, which was hands down the worst job ever. I had jumped around in a giant frog suit and the frog was dressed up as like a country Garth Brooks. So he had a big cowboy hat on. But listen, I made $10 an hour.
That's pretty, and that like $10 an hour when you're 17.
$10 an hour was a lot. And I started that job when I was like, I think 15, you know?
Were you doing the mascots at the same time?
Yeah, I would do...
Did they have a problem with that, or did they?
No, it was actually owned by the same... Citadel owned both of the radio stations. One was like a, you know, just like a rock station, like top 100, whatever, or top 20. I dressed up as a giant Tukey bird, which that was the worst because the nose was so giant, and the thing that I was looking out of was just this
thick mesh so I could barely see. But everyone would try and like hit the back of my head so the head would fly off. And I would like try and flip around, but my body was so big. And so I always knew they were behind me, but I could never see them.
That is an amazing.
Yeah.
You're just behind that mesh. And just
yeah, going, I'm like, stop hitting my head.
Yeah, it's just, there's
cut
nothing
to,
you can do
to
about
you,
it.
You, and it's just you in an empty parking lot thinking of someone constantly turning around.
Please, stop it.
You're saying to them, I'm going to Hollywood someday. They're like, yeah just follow your nose.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Do they know, do those radio stations still exist? Do they know that you were the guy who was in the, do they have any?
Yeah, actually how I got the job, my mom is a general sales manager at these radio stations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so she hooked it up.
But she's still working radio?
Yeah.
How is, what are her thoughts on the sort of, you know, like, is she doing okay still with radio, or?
No, it's because she works on commission.
Yeah.
And it's rough. It's rough out there. No one's buying, you know, ads anymore.
Who would have thought radio would just start to go away?
I know. Yeah. Radio has been around forever.
You can, in LA, they're opening up more stations, like there's going to be like pirate stations available,
right,
on the streams.
Say the guys cool. Who do a podcast. How come radio's not doing so hot?
Yeah, it has something to do with all this free content we're putting online.
No, that can't be it.
That can't be.
Oh my God, we're taking food out of your mother's mouth. I apologize. Please forgive me, Aaron.
What the hell am I doing here?
I'm so sorry. You're literally killing your mother with podcasts. I wish I had the sort of the gumption at a young age. I mean, that's a pretty focused decision to make as an eighth grader, to go, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to save all my money. I'm going to fucking do it.
Well, you know, in eighth grade, I'm sure all these schools had it, you know, like career day, where you meet different people from different careers.
Yeah.
And you fill out, you know, like a multiple choice, like questionnaire. And at the end, you tally it up and they're like, well, this kind of best fits you, and mine said the arts, mm-hmm, but they didn't have anything for the arts for me to go kind of ask questions about. And I'm like, that's interesting. But then once I started high school, I the advanced theater group was only allowed juniors and seniors, mm-hmm, and they were the only ones allowed to do the actual school like plays. And so I begged and pleaded to allow myself to audition in front of these students. I asked my teacher, I'm like, will you please, like, just ask them, see if it's okay. And so they said it was okay, and I did some, you know, monologue in front of them. They're like, yeah, come join. And so I took it very seriously and went out. My mom drove out with me when I was 17. I had an apartment, little studio apartment in North Hollywood set up, and she helped me move in. And literally, the day we were moving in was the huge shootout on Laurel Canyon.
The bank.
The big North Hollywood shootout.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was two blocks from, because I was on Laurel and Burbank, and it was just
15 years ago was really kind of before it transformed to the NoHo Arts District. NoHo. Like,
right.
It was not a great area of town.
It was not at all. much different now, but my mom's like, oh my God. What have I done? Because, you know, 17, you know, you think you really are an adult, but truly, you're kind of an infant. You know, you're still
kind of... Can't even buy cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't even buy cigarettes.
But I don't know. Like, I mean, I feel like a kid who was that focused and saved money and planned, I feel like you're a little better off than just some...
Yeah, I mean, she knew, like, I was, you know, she knew I was okay. She's like...
I think it's an important... Because a lot of people who listen to the show are, you know, like, they're performers or writers, or they want to create stuff, and a lot of people, I'm sure, live in a small town, you know, or just live somewhere where the thing they want to do isn't readily accessible. And then you hear your story and you're like, yeah, you just had a plan, you stayed with it, and you took some risks, and then that was it. That was the thing. Because a lot of people go, I don't know how do you do what you do?
Like, you just gotta do it. That's the question I get asked all the time. Like, wow, that must have been so scary. Like, was that a hard decision? No, I mean, I think everyone has a dream, right? You gotta fight for it.
It's not scary. Like, you do it and you don't think about how stupid and scary it is.
Yeah, exactly. You don't think about it. You just go for it.
Well, it's hard, and I think a lot of people get stuck in a town, sort of like being stuck in a crappy relationship, where it's just like, oh, I
should probably get out of this, but
it's comfortable.
No, it's comfortable.
What are you talking about?
Kyle Kinane has a funny bit about the suburbs where he talks about, like, it's like, you know, all these guys that come from, like, really shitty, like, you know, like, neighborhoods, and, like, it's like, there was crime everywhere, and I had to get out. He's all, that's a good excuse to get out. I come from the suburbs where, you know, you're just riding your bike, smoking pot, and talking about Star Wars, and all of a sudden you're 36.
Yeah, that's true. You're still young. You're only 32, like 31, 32? Yeah.
32.
Well, actually, I'm staying in the hotel. The hotel I'm staying in tonight was the last hotel I stayed in before I moved to L.A. when I drove out.
Oh, really?
The Santa Fe Sheraton.
Route 66.
That was the last hotel I stayed in before I
Did you write something on the wall like Shawshank?
No,
no. It's like up in the top.
Brooks was here.
Brooks was here.
I said Matt.
Oh, fuck. Oh, well.
I should have listened to myself last time and not gone to Chili's last night.
Why? What happened?
Listen to this.
At Chili's, they forgot to put a fork and knife in my meal that I brought to my hotel room, so I just ate it with my hands. It was a steak.
So close. That could call somebody to bring up utensils.
Listen, I wasn't going to bother someone, so right, I just...
Right. No, you know, it's very
Matt
nice
sat in his hotel room eating a steak with his hands, watching Frasier reruns on his laptop.
Yeah, sometimes you gotta live, you know? Yeah.
I don't know what to do with those tossed salad scrambled eggs.
The Blues are calling again.
Oh,
buddy.
Yeah.
So what do you... you I did.
Good night, Seattle.
Good night, Seattle.
Oh, it's not even... It's not even... Like, if you paint the entire picture,
yeah,
it really becomes more comfortable. I was alone in a motel in Albuquerque eating a steak with my hands.
Let's... Come on.
It's okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to downgrade you. I'm sorry I downgraded you. Do you think you want to do comedy next, or do you think...
I would love to do comedy, but I just don't find myself funny.
Really?
Yeah.
But maybe that's what would make you good for comedy, is if you played it super straight.
Yeah, I mean, I like the humor on Breaking Bad, because it's just real, honest humor, you know?
Yeah.
I can't find myself doing kind of like the slapsticky.
It's
type.
The difference between situational humor and jokes.
Yeah.
Of hitting jokes. Did you ever audition for, did you ever go through pilot season and audition for sitcoms, or were you just a drama
and
guy?
I've done some pilots that were, you know, for camera in front of an audience, and the adrenaline is, you know, you can't compare it to anything else. I mean, it's great, like going up in front of a whole crowd and hoping they would laugh, and, you know, sometimes they do. But,
right.
I don't know. I would like to do comedy. I think it'd be great. I always find myself gravitating towards really dark, kind of just intense shit, but I don't know. I just find that stuff so interesting.
And this is the last season of Breaking Bad coming up?
Not really.
Oh, good!
Yeah. No. Let's be honest.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm going to set the record straight.
Because a lot of people were saying, like, it's the final season coming up.
We have two seasons left. We have 16 episodes left.
Oh, good.
But it's going to be 8 episodes starting to air mid-July.
Okay.
Like July 16th or 17th, something like that, right around there. That's Sunday, right around there. And then the final 8 that we're going to start shooting way after these are done airing. We start shooting at the mid or end November.
Okay, good. That'll make people happy.
Yeah, and those will air, I believe, next July.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
How's
so fucked up?
It is going to get
no way it
so.
Can't.
Well, you have to. I always wonder. I really want to. I've never met Vince Gilligan, and I just always want to talk to him. And because it's as a writer, how do you maintain a level of intensity when you start getting into like 4, 5, 6 seasons, where it's like, because every season is going to have to end a little bit bigger than the previous season, and then all of a sudden it's just like exponential intensity by the 6th season. So
well,
how do you...
eventually Frasier moved to Chicago.
No, Matt, we're not talking about Frasier.
That's 11
anymore.
Seasons. I mean, they did a really good job.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, Pro Shop. We're in the pro
we
shop.
You should just answer it.
It's Vallejo. It's Christine Vallejo.
Christine Vallejo.
Christine.
She went, where's my ball, motherfucker?
It's Art Silva.
Where's my Captain America ball? Bitch! I didn't mean to say that. I didn't mean to say that.
Also, this looks like a Pokemon ball.
What, that basketball? That basketting ball?
That's the same
colors.
Yeah,
I guess.
I don't know much about Pokemon.
Like Pokemon.
I'm just trying to relate to our listeners.
It looks more like our web-crawling friend Spider-Man than it does anything else.
No.
Have you seen Vince do interviews? Have you seen...
He did a podcast on our network called the Nerdist Writers Panel that my friend Ben Blacker does, and apparently he was amazing.
Yeah.
And but just to go for... I mean, like, X-Files?
I mean...
Breaking Bad? Yeah. I mean, it's... I love seeing a guy like that where you go, oh, it wasn't an accident. It was not an accident.
Yeah.
You're just this fucking good.
He's just, I mean, he's so, and he's just the nicest guy. You're like, where do you come up with this?
Yeah.
You know? You wonder what's going on deep, deep in the core.
Well, there's another, I feel like there's another level of, which, I mean, it really is kind of lucky to work with cool people, but for you as a young actor, you know, coming onto the show, that everyone was cool. And there was that there's not like a douchebag in the bunch. It's just a nice lesson of like, oh, you can be cool. You don't have to be a cock.
You don't have to be such a dick, you know? And if you have a showrunner that's just an asshole, it just bleeds down to everybody else. And it's like, oh, it's just miserable.
Have you had that before? You don't have to say who.
No, I mean, actually, showrunners... I mean, I know some showrunners that are like that.
Yeah.
For sure. Have I worked with them? Not really. Like, on Big Love, Matt and Will, they're the greatest guys. Like, could not be nicer. But everyone, I mean, if Brian was an asshole, I mean, it would just be miserable.
Yeah.
You know, because every day I'm working with him. But he's just constantly pulling pranks, making dick jokes. You know, it's just so random.
Telling people they're fired.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Taking all the credit for a thing that you did.
You know, I rented out this bowling alley with him.
I mean, I put Aaron's name on the invitation to just make him feel like he was part
it's
of the group.
Yeah. I rented that bowling alley out with Brian Cranston.
But it's like he's writing the epitaph before he dies.
Yes.
That's how he said it. I read the volume.
I did it, man,
damn. I don't know how, like, you hear these horror stories of productions, just like Moonlighting or any of those shows where it's like, oh, yeah, the stars couldn't even be in the same fucking room with each other. Like, how do you even go to work like that?
Yeah, I know. Like, I Love Lucy. You know, and towards the end of I Love Lucy, weren't they just hating each other?
Yeah, that's like they were getting a divorce.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, oh, God.
And every day they have to go and pretend that they love each other.
Yeah, I just feel that way about the last season of Dexter. Since, like, you know,
they split up.
Right.
Like, they got together during the show. They split up and
First of all, bad idea to date your co-star when
bad
you're still working.
Bad idea.
Because of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that was, like, the most intimate scenes they had out of the whole series. Like, they had to make out in, like, some weird dream sequence. And, like, that's gotta be the fucking worst.
Right?
This guy can't be cool. Especially if you have, like, a new girlfriend, too. And you're like,
right.
Yeah, there's a scene I have to make out with my ex-wife.
Hey, remember when we did this? Legally?
For real?
Because we were married.
Yes.
And now we're not together.
Yes.
And we have to crawl all over each other.
Let's remember happier times with Jimmy Smits.
That was season 3.
It was.
Is it season 3?
4?
What are you watching right now? Do you even have time to watch?
I'm Loved, actually. Yeah. I'm actually rewatching Lost for the third time.
Oh, nice.
My friend's doing the same thing.
It is. I mean, did you guys watch that
show? Of course.
It is so brilliant. My fiance has never seen it, so we're on season 4 right now.
It's a good show to go back and watch again because of you just forget so much stuff that you get to go back and go, oh, that's why the painting of the Black Rock was in the background.
Yeah.
Oh, because,
It's so good. And then Game of Thrones.
Fucking loving Game of Thrones. Peter Dinklage.
God.
I can love that man.
Dude, he's brilliant. I've actually only seen, I haven't seen any of the second season, and I'm not even completed with the first season.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
So I just started. But,
Well, he gets way more badass.
He's just badass.
And you still want to fucking murder that kid, the blonde kid.
Oh, my God. What? I mean, that pilot, the first episode, I could not believe how much shit went on. Wait. Are you sure this is the first episode?
Yeah,
you know?
I had to watch it.
And then
it.
That relationship, the brother-sister relationship, my God.
Yeah. No, it's fucking...
Different time then, you guys.
Yeah, it's just such
a
history.
Different time. Real history. Yeah. Different time.
Yeah. It was okay to fuck your sister.
Yeah.
Also on Dexter. Is there any kind of... is there anything else you want to... I mean, when you're sort of looking ahead, you must have agents whispering in your ear, like, oh, man, you got to be thinking about, we got to start planning. Is anyone doing that to you?
Yeah, they are. And I just...
Because you're going to get scripts.
And I do get scripts, and just so many scripts come my way. Like, oh, hey, player, lovable drug addict. You know, I'm just like, well, that's a stretch.
Departure.
Yeah. And so I'm just trying to stay as far away from that as possible.
Yeah.
And it's so refreshing to finally be at a point in my career where I can kind of be more picky than I have been.
Yeah.
Rather than just taking any job that comes my way.
Yeah.
I'm just going to just take it slow and try and do some kind of gritty, honest indies at the point. And
I think that's a good plan because, I mean, as someone who has never had a dramatic career, I know what I'm talking about. but just as an audience, as a viewer of people that I like, I feel like sometimes they get sucked in the trap where it's like they come off a really great role or a great show, and then they just take something only because it's a starring role in something rather than really being the best kind of role, because I'm sure their agents are like, you're a star, man. You gotta drive this thing yourself. You're like, yeah, oh, but I really should have probably taken the really cool character thing that was a little bit smaller of a part and a lower profile movie.
I mean, I'm very much just a character actor. That's all I want to do. Just very character-y roles that are completely opposite from me. I'm not by any means any sort of leading man type guy. I just want to do just interesting, kind of crazy, off the beaten path type roles.
Does the celebrity thing feel weird? Or does it get in the way? Or is it kind of like...
I hate it. I hate it. To be honest. I just... Especially, it's so strange. In Albuquerque, because the first couple seasons, you could go anywhere. It'd be fine. But now it's just... I mean, people watch the show across, you know, America, or across the world, really. But in Albuquerque, it feels like every single human being watches the show. Well, besides the guy with the list. but
you found the one guy.
Yeah, the one guy. One guy. It's just hard, you know. I mean, it's great that people are supporting and they love the show, and but I don't. I never have liked attention.
I think it's weird because, you know, some people would go, oh yeah, it's real hard being famous, it's real hard. But you go, yeah, but I think what a lot of those people don't understand is that you, I'm not saying I get it a lot, but people I know who've achieved a degree of success, they just kind of feel exposed all the time. Like everything, people just kind of living under a microscope, and anything they do, if it's not exactly what people want to see, they're like, that guy's a fucking dick. And you're like, it's just, I'm having a bad day. Please
don't judge me. You know, it is tough. And I can't even imagine what it's like for, you know, like the Matt Damons or the...
Well, they just don't go out.
They just, they live, you know, in some castle somewhere. You know.
Yeah, they're all their houses are connected by tubes.
They're like hamsters.
They can't see the sun, right? They disappear.
Right.
Yeah. The Ralph's on Sunset, there's a tube that goes...
Well, there's a celebrity grocery store underneath. Yeah, where they buy all the special things that we can't get.
Yeah, of course.
As people. I think that's good, though. I think not really wanting the celebrity part, I think that'll help you make good acting choices rather than famous choices, which are, they're different. Those are different things.
It's totally different. I mean, you look at, for example, Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah.
At the beginning of, or maybe not at the beginning of his career, but the height of his career. He was doing really good, like good stuff. You know, he won an Oscar. I mean, he's a great actor, but then he started taking roles. I don't know if it's for just exposure or for the money or, you know, working with chimps or whatever.
Snow dogs.
Yeah, you know, it's just, and then his career just, like, took a dive.
Yeah.
He's struggling, because he's still great, but he's just struggling to kind of make his way back.
Well, I think that's what it was, is that a lot of times, like, you know, they'll talk about the Oscar curse. Like, if a young actor, like, gets an Oscar right off the, you know, pretty right off the bat, then there's sort of a downhill. And I think a lot of it has to do with, like, not great planning or having, I mean, I don't know, or having not the right career path and wanting to be more famous and then actually wanting to be an actor.
Exactly.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it's like in that realm. I mean, so many things have to happen for a movie to be good. I don't even know how anyone gets it.
Exactly.
It's kind of a crapshoot.
You never know. I mean, when I read Breaking Bad, it was hands down the best pilot that I've read. Possibly the best thing that I've read at that point, for sure. But I didn't think it was going to have a chance in hell to see the light of day, because I never had seen any sort of television program like that air. But I still had to, you know, just fight for it. And then once you book it, you feel like you're a part of something special. But with our DPs and just our directors, it just all came together, and the cast, and it just, you know, I don't know, it was just kind of magical. And you never know if something's going to hit. And then it's slowly but surely kind of taking off, and each season, you know, we kind of grab more viewers. And
how many auditions, what was the audition process for the show?
The first meeting I had was with Vince, and they said, read the script and just pick two scenes from the script, any scenes you want. And so I picked a couple scenes. I met with Vince and Melissa Bernstein in the casting, and I had worked with Melissa Bernstein, one of our producers, before, years ago, on a short film, and so it was already like kind of a warm room. And I did an episode of X-Files also years ago. It wasn't one of Vince's episodes, but it was Tom Snows, who actually is a writer on our show now, but he wrote that episode, and I played Sky Commander Winky, and that was Vince's nickname in college. And so he's like, oh my god, it was such like a warm room already.
Oh,
so it just broke the ice. And I think he was really fighting for me even before I read, to be honest. He's like, I hope he does a good job, you know? And then he's like, that's great, you know, just how about you study the scene, go to the hallway, come in whenever you're ready. And so I did, and then I had one more audition after that, which was the test, and it was, you know, three other guys. And I found out, usually find out kind of right away, but they waited like a solid week and a half, 2 weeks.
Oh, by that point you go, I didn't get it.
I didn't get it, yeah. And in the middle of pilot season, so I couldn't really audition for anything else because no one would take you in second position.
Sure.
So they had kind of like a hold on me, and yeah, but then, you know, I got it.
What's your audition technique? Do you go right for the motivation, or do you go for the lines, or do you try to...
God, it's all different. You know, I try and...
You do it with your hands.
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff with my hands. Constant movement.
Hey, Aaron, less robot.
I don't know. It's all different. I just try and kind of just dissect each scene. Kind of just understand why this character's in the situation he's in. And try and not act it, but try and... just make myself believe that I'm living it. So
when Brian was on, I said, what would have been your fallback career? And he was like, there wasn't one. I mean, yeah. I just knew that. He said he knew that even if it meant that for the rest of his life he was living in like a crappy apartment, yeah, and having roommates or whatever, but still being able to act, that he would do that.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's. I definitely never had, you know, a backup plan. It's so great. I gotta give so much credit to my mother. When I was, I graduated early, so I had to have all these teachers sign this paper, whatever. So many of my teachers were supportive, especially my drama teacher, Mrs. Link. But there's this one teacher, I forget her name, but she's like, you know, do you think this is, oh no, Mrs. Moyer, what's your backup plan? Do you have a backup plan? Are you sure? I don't know if this is a good idea. Like, really, is this kind of scary? Like, what's your backup plan? And it kind of like made me nervous, but still like, it wasn't gonna change my mind. I told my mom that when she picked me up from school, and she's like, she got so furious. My mom's the sweetest woman on the planet. She got out of the car and walked into, it was actually, it wasn't a teacher, she was our counselor at the school.
Way worse.
So she walked in, she's like, how dare you say that my son shouldn't go after his dreams, shame on you. And like, what is your backup plan? What is your, you know, what if you get fired, what's your backup plan? And so it was great.
Oh, that's nice. That's
awesome. Yeah.
But like, seriously, what is your mom's backup plan? Radio's not doing well.
Well, I think it's about time to go out and bowl against Team Breaking Bad. But it's so great to finally have you on the
podcast.
Thank
you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
It was kind of fun to come to New Mexico. Like, we're gonna go to New Mexico and make a podcast and shoot a thing. It made us feel like we're really doing something.
We're really doing it, you guys.
No, we're really doing it.
So
eating
important.
Steaks
what we
with
did
our hands.
So important. Yeah,
watching
so,
Frasier.
Yeah. The hard part was the broccoli. The mashed potatoes.
Yeah, mashed potatoes.
Use the broccoli for the fucking mashed potatoes.
Yeah,
easy.
The broccoli scoops.
Listen, I figured it out.
Let's just say you figured it out.
You figured out how to eat it. That's about the only thing you've ever figured out.
Oh, buddy.
Thanks, Jonah. Have a good one.
All right, cool. Well, enjoy your hand steak. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Enjoy your burrito.
Hand steak.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.